This morning, we are going to focus on one word, one idea, one concept, and that is the concept of discipline. Now, I would guess that one of two things comes to your mind immediately when I say the word discipline. One of them is a negative connotation, and the other one is a positive connotation. So first, the negative. When I say the word discipline, if the first thoughts that come to your head are very harsh thoughts and uncomfortable thoughts and pleasant thoughts, then you have a negative view of discipline. For you, when I say the word discipline, it brings to mind things like punishment and pain and maybe even shame. Discipline represents the consequences for doing something wrong, or perhaps a set of expectations that is imposed upon you by an authority figure or an authority body. Or, to put it even more simply, being forced to do something that you don't want to do. But I would also guess that some of you have a very positive conception and perception of discipline as well. For you, discipline is a wonderful thing. And it is actually a wonderful thing. It's a friend to every person who wants to make progress in their life. It's a friend to anyone who has established high goals and has a place conceived of that you are traveling, a better place than the one that you are in right now. For people like that, discipline provides a framework, and it also provides stepping stones to get from a point B, or from a point A to a point B, which is where you want to go. And of course, that process entails all kinds of growth, along with some of the pain and some of the suffering. But one obvious example of this concept, this positive concept of discipline, is the serious athlete, right? The serious athlete, one who imposes upon himself or herself a strict program of diet and exercise and skill building, training, investing all kinds of time and energy. Now you might ask, why would somebody spend all that time? Why would anybody put so much energy into something like that? Why bother? What's the payoff? Well, in the case of an athlete, it's because someday that aspiring athlete hopes to be a top athlete and to compete in the highest levels possible in the discipline that they have given themselves over to. And you know, when that opportunity comes for those serious athletes, that discipline has kind of proven itself to pay off. All of the effort, all of the sacrifice, all of the pain that was invested becomes justified in that you have reached that place that you had set out to arrive at. Now, just as an aside, when it comes to athletics, when it comes to any other goals that we create in life, and when we make the commitment to do the work that it takes to get there, that always, always entails faith. Now this morning, we're going to learn a little bit about the value of discipline by examining someone who characterizes the opposite of discipline, okay? We're going to consider the sluggard, as we just read about in Proverbs chapter 6. And we're going to try and learn some positive and edifying things from a bad example. That's not always the best way to do things, but the Bible provides us with both good examples and bad examples to help us to grow. Now, Proverbs, for those who seek wisdom, provides some characteristics of the sluggard. And they're not all contained in the verses that we read, but we'll reference some other things as well. The first characteristic is from our text. A sluggard is someone who puts things off, primarily when it comes to difficult or unpleasant things. Difficult and unpleasant things, but absolutely necessary in terms of growing and getting where you want to go. We read about that in verses 9 and 10, where it says, "How long will you lie there, you sluggard? When will you get up from your sleep? A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest, and bad things will happen." In essence, the message is, if you don't put in the work, when you have to put in the work, then you will never gain the positive fruits of your labor. No investments, no returns. In fact, if you refuse to put in the hard work, it's not like you won't reap a plentiful harvest. It's just that that harvest that you reap is going to be one of poverty and of disappointment. And who wants to work toward something like that? You know, as I was thinking about this week, I don't even necessarily see this as a punishment inflicted on some kind of a higher authority. And that's kind of the interesting thing about some of these themes in Proverbs. Instead, it's just kind of a natural law. It's kind of a self-evident natural law. Now, God designed the world to work in certain ways, so I suppose indirectly it would be a punishment from God when you don't do the right things and you reap the consequences of those wrong things. But honestly, this is just how the world works in every area of life. Discipline is valuable, and sluggardliness and laziness and a kind of a disattention to the proper things leads to ruin. The second characteristic of a sluggard that we read about in Proverbs is someone who constantly and consistently makes too many bad choices and has too many poor excuses for the choices that they've made. So Proverbs 26, verse 16, "The sluggard is wiser in his own eyes than seven men who answer discreetly." And so a sluggard is someone who just can't see their predicament for what it is, that it is the consequences of bad choices. And so when bad things happen to sluggardly people, they look all around themselves and at all the other people around them, and they say, well, that person is to blame for my circumstances, and that person is to blame for my circumstances, and this situation didn't work to improve my situation at all, and it's everybody else's fault but mine. The sluggard is someone who can't see the reality of their own predicament. And yet, this is kind of reinforcing that point. Even the sluggard has desires for success. And you know, if it wasn't for the sluggard's foolishness and lack of vision and eyesight, we would say that this is perhaps the most inexplicable thing. Why would you expect good results if you're doing the wrong things? Proverbs 13, verse 4 says, "The sluggard craves and gets nothing." And so it's not that the sluggard doesn't want success. It's that they refuse to do the work of seeing and then doing what is necessary to achieve success. And also, when it comes to the making excuses portion of that, there's also oftentimes a sense of entitlement at play in those situations too. Third characteristic, the sluggard is someone who develops and nurtures bad habits. Proverbs 26:14, "As the door turns on its hinges, so the sluggard turns on his bed." You know, how many of you... probably not recently, it's a book that's been out for a long time. I think I read it in junior high or high school. How many of you have read Seven Habits of Highly Effective People? Heard of it? Give me some hands here. You've heard of it. Good. Now, one of the things that Stephen Covey puts forth in that book is that Habits are some of the most powerful forces in a person's life. And the thing about habits is that we have some control over the habits that we nurture and develop in our lives. And so when you're talking about a sluggard or a foolish person, and when you're talking about a wise person who has goals, you know, the habits that are developed in each type of life are going to be very, very different. The sluggard is going to develop habits that kind of serve the needs and wants that they feel at the moment that they feel them. And disciplined, wise people, they are going to actually be mindful and thoughtful about the destination that they're trying to reach. And so the habits that they develop in their lives are going to reflect something of delayed gratification. Because there are things that I can do right this moment and this very day that are going to get me farther away from my goals, and there are things that I can do that are going to get me closer to my goals. And so the sluggard develops bad habits. And if we were talking in New Testament Pauline language, the sluggard would be something of a slave to physical desires. Oh, I want that. I want that right now. I'm going to go get that, even if long-term and overarching, it gets them farther away from where they want to be. Sluggards are stuck in a rut that way. They're stuck in life because the habits that they've developed keep them in a rut. Fourth characteristic, the sluggard is someone who doesn't follow through. Someone who has no momentum and no motivation. Proverbs 26:15. The sluggard buries his hand in the dish. He is too lazy to bring it back to his mouth. Now that's quite an image. It's kind of a ridiculous image, silly. That you are eating and you are so lazy that you can't even follow through with what you're eating. It kind of reminds me, actually. It kind of reminds me when my family went to Scotland to visit my brother and sister, and we had to fly through the night, and then we pushed through that whole next day because we needed to adjust to the time difference. And I remember going out for supper that night, just everybody so exhausted. And Kate ordered pasta, and she was literally fork in hand at the table in the restaurant. Mouth kind of open, ready, but it's like, I just don't have the energy to do this. Kind of funny. But, you know, for the sluggard, this is a common experience that goes far beyond eating. So it's quite an image. Somebody that can't even follow through with eating the food that's in front of them. And it, you know, it brought to my mind another saying that's quite common. And it is this: the road to hell is paved with good intentions. Now, just as the sluggard has, you know, desires, ultimate desires for his life, you know, they have good intentions sometimes. And I believe that to be true. But good intentions, as wonderful as they are, if you never follow through on them, are absolutely useless. So, final characteristic, the sluggard is someone who spurns instruction and refuses accountability. Proverbs 10, verse 8, the wise in heart accept commands, but a chattering fool comes to ruin. And so here's a couple of significant questions that I want to ask you this morning. Where in your life are you a sluggard? Where in your life are you a sluggard? Because, you know, we can look at all of the characteristics of a sluggard that I just talked about, and we can look at certain areas of our life where we don't really exhibit any of those characteristics, and we feel pretty good about ourselves. Like, you know, I have my life pretty well together, you know. I don't fall asleep while I'm eating, usually. You know, I follow through on the stuff that I commit to. You know, I listen to wise counsel when it's given to me. I have the brains and I have the wisdom to acknowledge when somebody is telling me something wise. And, you know, these are all somewhat public things. I mean, I look out at you right now and I see a lot of people that, you know, look like you have your lives pretty well together. So do I. It's Lord's Supper Sunday, so I even wore a tie. So, you know, we have things pretty well together, right? Well, Gordon MacDonald is an author, and a few years ago he wrote a book called Ordering Your Private World. And he makes this kind of interesting distinction. He says that all of us have kind of two worlds that we exist in. The one world is our public world. Our public world consists of all the different things, all the different activities that other people see about us. And so that would include, you know, something like work ethic. That would include the different groups that we're a part of and the way that we invest in those groups. That would consist of, you know, whether we go to church or not, or whether we're part of a small group or not. It's all things that people can see. It's all the things that most of us are very diligent in because it's the things that people see. But MacDonald says that we also all exist in a private world as well. And the private world is where our most deep-seated desires and emotions and, I think I'm making up this word, but quirkities are. Just the different places that we go when we're untethered, you know, consciously to something else. And so, you know, that would be the realm of deep thought, really getting at the core of who we are. That would be our spiritual selves as well. And we talked about some of these things last week, some of these things that feed the inner world or the innermost part of ourselves. And that included what? Do you remember? It was prayer, reading God's word, and Christian fellowship. Kind of an accountability with one another and a willingness to be vulnerable to one another as Christians and share the different things that deep down we struggle with and ask for prayer and ask for accountability in those deeper things. Because the thing is, our culture kind of forces us to invest massive amounts of time and energy into our public selves so that we can keep up appearances, so that we can maintain the respect of the people around us. But because we put so much time and energy into those outward things, many of us don't put time and energy and investment into those things that are even more important, those things of the inner self, like our spiritual health, like the health of our heart. We don't have a good prayer life. We don't have a consistent devotional life. We engage in Christian community, but not at a terribly deep level because we don't want to reveal our faults and we don't want to reveal the darker places of our souls to each other. And I'm going to tell you something, because that's the way most of us are, you are a sluggard. You are a sluggard in spiritual things, and so am I. We need to be more serious about this. We need to invest this wisdom that Proverbs gives us about not being like a sluggard. We need to invest this in every facet of life, including, and perhaps most especially, into the deepest areas of our life. We'll put this in New Testament terms and we'll connect this to Jesus. The discipline that Proverbs teaches us to nurture and develop in our lives, in New Testament language, could be considered a way that we take up our cross and follow Jesus. Now, Jesus, of course, As he was the perfect example in everything, was the perfect example in discipline as well. Jesus always did the right thing. Jesus was never self-centered, and Jesus was never trying to feed his desires and his needs at the moment that they crossed his mind or shot through his body. Jesus always had the end goal in mind, and the end goal that Jesus had was to die a terrible death, to rise from the dead, to ascend into heaven, so he would be Lord over all creation, and so that he would be able to offer salvation to us, so that we can even be having this discussion about what it means to be a disciplined Christian. Jesus exemplifies discipline, and he exemplified it to his death. And so now the way we approach the discipline that is taught to us in Proverbs is not as some sort of a means to earn our own salvation, but it is a means by which we can show our gratitude to Jesus Christ for what he did for us, and so that we can even now begin living into this vision of our lives that God has for each one of us, this vision of our lives that's going to last into eternity when we just enjoy the presence of our great God. And as we go to the Lord's Supper this morning, this is one of the things that we remember. Our lives of discipline as believers in Jesus Christ is one of the ways that we, through the Lord's Supper, proclaim the Lord's death until he comes. Thanks be to God that he invites us into this kind of life. With discipline comes the joy of being one of God's beloved sons and daughters. We are part of God's family.